birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamets, I hope you're getting stuff done, son, and meeting them goals. Yes, I just kicked off my very first show of the season, the holiday season. I do a lot of corporate and holiday shows this time of year. And we just got back from Atlanta, Georgia, which I love the people in Atlanta, but I'm going to be honest with you. I hate the damn traffic. Yeah, and Atlanta has a lot of, it's like they never don't have traffic. It doesn't matter. There's like a lot of people in Atlanta, and every damn one of them drive, and every damn one of them go to the same damn place at the same damn time, apparently. But other than that, hey, I love that town. I am excited about some upcoming shows. I want to give a quick shout out to public shows, not the private shows, but the public shows. December 30th, I'm going to be in Ringgold, Georgia at a place called Caffeine Addicts. So if you're in Ringgold area, freaking come out, man, and see me. We're going to have an abracadam good time. And then New Year's Eve, if you like to gamble and have some fun, I'm going to be at Harrah's Cherokee Casinos in Cherokee, North Carolina. That's New Year's Eve, so come hang out with me New Year's Eve. And then a show that I'm extremely excited about that I want to try to give as much love as I possibly can is I'm doing a local show here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And if you do follow me, you know that I don't get to do a lot of local stuff these days. So on January 7th, I'm going to be at Scruffy City Hall, and I'm going to have the very funny Jessica Carter with me. And tickets are on sale right now on Eventbrite, and definitely check that out, and it's going to be a fantastic time. We are going to get down on that show, that I guarantee you. But yeah, and anything else, you can just check out at DannyWitsonMagic.com, where I post all upcoming shows. All right, well, enough about me. Now I want to talk about another very, very funny stand-up comedian. And he's a very talented podcaster as well. Fantastic podcast that I highly recommend that you check out on YouTube called Never Been Happier. He is a I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple years ago when I was playing the Idiot Box in Greensboro, North Carolina, another great club. So, but anyways, I had to get him on the podcast. I had to talk to him, and we talk about some really great things, some really heavy topics, but then we, you know, we get back around to comedy. So, this is a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed this conversation. So, if you will, Abracadamets, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the very funny Eric Trundy. All right, I'm excited. We got stand-up comedian Eric Trundy here on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Eric?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good, man, and I'm so glad that we could finally make this happen. My schedule is crazy. Your schedule is crazy, too. But I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, like I said, I've already said your name, so they know your name. But if you don't mind to introduce yourself a little more in depth to the Abracadam listeners.
Yeah, dude. I'm Eric Trundy. I got a podcast. It's called Never Been Happier. It's on YouTube. I've been running the channel for a little while. It's called The Creative Businessman. We're changing the name. I've been a comedian for 11 years. I'm 45 years old. I like walks on the beach and a little bit of weed.
You know, okay, so you are 45. I turned 45 in like January. So
okay.
And I think we look good for 45, brother.
I'll take it, man.
We're rocking, could be worse.
Yeah, I should have done better, but I got what I got.
Man, your podcast, dude, it is fantastic. It is, great, dude. And you know, in a day and age where you know there's podcasts are a dime a dozen, and anybody can sit down and make a video about anything, yours looks professionally very, very well done.
So thanks, man.
It's like, I don't know, man. It's like easy on the eyes. I don't know what it is, man. But
that's what I was going for. You know, whenever I see other podcasts and to get me to watch something, it's got to be a little bit extra. It's got to keep me involved. You know, I can listen to a podcast while I do the dishes, but so a couple of things that I went with, I was like, I don't want them to be too long. My first episode was around an hour. And that was just because we had a great talk and we were trying to figure stuff out. But going forward, everyone's been a half hour and they're going to keep being a half hour. I think that's a watchable, ingestible thing. We also want it to be engaging and weird, man. We got, you know, I want it to be heartfelt conversations, maybe some laughs if they come naturally, some weird shit, some crying and some puppets, man. And, and you know, I want to talk about heavy stuff, and I want to do it in a way that's palatable. I want to do it in a way that people can hear the conversations and maybe relate to something that they got going on in their lives that they don't really talk about all the time. And so we talk about mental health, man. We talk about addiction and just all of it, just regular grown people shit.
You know, that's real conversations. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you bring up the topic of mental health, dude. I am finally doing better, but it started along with everybody else during the pandemic with me. And gosh, dude, I put on a lot of weight, just trying to eat myself to feeling better. You know what I mean? But depression, which that's just a nasty cycle. You just get even more depressed, you know?
Yeah.
Finally, you know, I've been able to break the cycle and start moving ahead positive. And but I mean, I think, you know, that's something that we need to talk about because, you know, man, we don't forever. We didn't talk about that. Even like when me and you were kids, mental health wasn't a discussion. It wasn't even a word, dude. If you talked about that, you're crazy. You know.
Yeah, man. We were raised by a generation of people who was raised by a generation of people who was raised by a generation of people, man. And the depression is right there. All the world wars are right there. My grandfather, you know, smoking a cigarette, having me in the lab drinking vodka, telling me stories about the Korean War. I couldn't tell him I was sad. Why? You know what I mean? I've dealt with a lot of shit in my life, and I always talked about it. I think that's why I'm funny, is I had to find ways of talking about this stuff, and the way that was palatable for most people was to make it funny. And here recently in the last couple of years, man, I've taken it more seriously. You talked about the pandemic and being sad and put on weight, and I think there's just a really common thing for a lot of people. You know, when the things that you were medicating with, your life, your job, your whatever it is, those things get taken away from you. What gets put on the forefront is you. When you have to spend time with yourself and all of your distractions and your self-medications are taken away, you have to have a conversation with yourself, and you haven't in a long time, and it's a shitty conversation. And so, you know, turns into eating your feelings and drinking your feelings and all that same shit. So that was a big thing for everybody going around the pandemic and really being honest. I took some mushrooms and I was walking around, and when everybody was locked down, I'm looking at all the apartments and the houses, and I really started crying, man. I was just like, well, I started thinking about me as a kid, and I was like, well, first off, everybody who their social circles were taken away, their jobs, all of that. And then I started thinking about me as a kid being locked in a house with a bunch of people I didn't want to be locked in with. Things could have been a lot worse. And during the pandemic, I really felt bad for all the people who had to deal with themselves and the kids who didn't get to go to school, who that was their break. I hated school, but I loved being in a place that wasn't home. And I loved going to a place where I could get a meal in the morning and a meal midday. And I thought about a lot of people who didn't have the same everyday routines when we got locked down, you know?
You know, I mean, it really affected a lot of people. And, you know, I look back and I wish that I could have done more positive with myself instead of negative that happened. But it just, you know, things just kind of happened. And it was also kind of the perfect storm for me. There was other things I was dealing with, and then that happened. And it was really tough. But, hey, now that there is a light out, you know, we're back, you know, we're doing things, and I will give a quick plug to a service that I highly recommend, and that is the I guess the BetterHelp.
Okay.
You know, that was I did that and spoke to some therapists, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that's great, man.
And it's convenient and it's affordable. So, you know, that was really cool. And you know, I'm never, I don't know about you, Eric, but man, I don't do well alone. I'm not that guy. So that's why, you know, I've got amazing Antoinette, you know, with me everywhere I go and stuff, you know, on shows on the road and stuff. So
Yeah.
she's excellent to have because Danny's not good alone. You know, too much time with myself is
Well, typically creative people have a lot of chatter in their brains, man, and that fucking thing up there that also makes you funny and creative and talented is also the thing that torments you when you're by yourself. And you
Yeah.
know, as humans, man, isolation is not good. When you spend so much time isolated, you trick yourself and you tell yourself that your tribe doesn't want you, that you are worthless, and that all the bad things are true and none of the good things are. And so, yeah, man, I totally get it. Isolation is a real motherfucker.
Did you I shared this the other day and I saw it at, on a TikTok and it was from Conan's podcast. He had Colin Hanks. He was interviewing Colin
Okay.
Hanks and he was talking about the first time he met John Candy. And dude, this is a dope ass quote, brother. Such a dope ass quote, man. But you know, Conan was a really young guy and he was picking John up. You know, he was picking him up for the airport and he said he got to talking to John, and John asked him, said, "So, what are your plans? What are you going to do?" And you know, Conan was like, "Well, I think I'm going to try comedy." And you know, John Candy looked at him and said, "No, kid, no one tries comedy. You do comedy because you have
Yeah, man.
to." And
Yeah.
dude, that
Yeah.
hit,
It's a
you know,
compulsion.
yeah,
Yeah,
that hit.
that was another thing in the during the pandemic, man. I was like, I really felt like I got this break. So this is not to make the whole thing self-helpy, but you know, I had just experienced a pretty big loss going into 2020, and I was like, well, I'm gonna quit drinking, I'm gonna quit smoking, and all of this shit. And I had a lot of work booked on the road. And it turns out, you know, not being able to go is probably a good thing. I don't think I would have made it back, to be perfectly honest with you, because I was about to spend basically a whole year alone and all this. And so when I didn't have to do comedy anymore and I was just staying local with six, seven, 10 people spread out outside, that seemed a little bit easier to me. And then when comedy started back up, man, the anxiety that I had to deal with that I had never dealt with before because I was always drinking and smoking was completely new, man. And so I really got it in my head that I was done. I was not going to do this anymore. Why am I going to willingly go torture myself and stand in front of dummies who don't give a fuck about what I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. But it was all just a bunch of projections and stuff. It turns out I really love it. I just had to make some adjustments that I wasn't really capable or qualified to make. They're above my pay grade, but you know, I just keep working on them and getting over the anxiety and all that stuff. And I really do. I feel like I'm doing it for the first time, but with a little bit of a head start because I know how to come up with material. You know what I mean? That's like
Dude, I love it, bro. I love what you're posting and what you're sharing on Instagram. You
no,
know,
thanks.
it's making me laugh. I love it, man.
Thanks, bro.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, nowadays, and you get to see a lot of comedy. I'm glad, this is what I'm glad. I'm glad that the good comics are putting stuff out there versus a lot of the bad. What can I say this? You know. The social media comics, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've kind of come to terms with a lot of that. I think I was pretty judgy with that for a while, and now it's an interesting thing. Whenever you're making something, being in a spot now where I'm making things, I've always kind of held everything close to my vest. I just performed live. I never put out clips of material. And it's because I think it was I didn't want to be judged and all that. And then so as I'm putting stuff out, I realize even if comics are doing things that aren't quite my cup of tea, not quite to my taste, I'm just like, you know, good for them. Our audiences, I think, will be different. I think there are some comics who put stuff out who can't really do an hour. And then I think there's comics who don't put stuff out and could bang out multiple hours a week. And I'm happy for all of them, you know, like whatever it takes for you to put something up online, man. If some people like that stuff, you know, I tend to call a lot of people dummies, you know, and it's not always a negative thing, but there's enough dummies for everybody. And there are going to be dummies who like this and dummies who like
God,
that.
You're
you know?
So right. Okay. I gotta say this. All right. Now, I'm with you. I am with you. But probably when I say, I think there is a lot. There are some. Now, I know some social media comics who've had a lot of success on social media who are comics.
Yeah.
Who you know, they are out there and they've got a huge following. You know, so, and I know them, but then there's also these guys who, you know, that's where their success started. And I don't think they definitely don't have an hour.
Yes.
And, you know, so, I think it's not my problem, but I think the bookers will have to figure out a way how to weed out who's the real deal and who's not.
That depends on what the bookers are looking for too, because
that's
a lot
true.
Of bookers don't give a fuck if you're funny, man. They just care if you can get 225 butts in a room who are going to get a 2-drink minimum and order some steel chicken tenders.
Absolutely. And that is 100% correct. You know, I learned that the hard way. You know, there was times that, you know, I tried to book, you know, there was some rooms that I wanted to play that, you know, my response was, well, Danny, can you sell, you know, 150 tickets on a Wednesday night?
Right.
And I was like, I can't guarantee that, you know, and that's
right.
Probably the toughest thing about show business, period, is that having a good act isn't good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the tough part about what we do. And I mean, social media is one way how to build that, you know, absolutely. It's one way how to build that. I don't like that. I put videos out, Eric. And sometimes I don't like to put, I'm always a little nervous sometimes when I do put some of my routines out, because I don't want, mainly I don't want some magician to lift it.
Sure.
Because, you know, my stuff honestly comes from, you know, right up here.
It's hard work.
And yeah, it's hard damn work. And then I'm like, you know, all it's going to take is maybe somebody to lift it. And then, you know, so I mean, and magicians in the magic community is not as particular on things like that as it is in the comedy world. You know, if somebody lifts material in the comedy world, eventually it gets back around and, we blast him and blackball. You know what I'm saying? Cut that person out. In the magic community, it's kind of like, fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's where all the tricks come from, right? Is, I don't know. I think we may have talked about this one last time we saw each other. But I, you know, I studied magic for quite a while. I'm a super big fan. I got cards all over my place. I'm really into it. And so I know that there must be a difficult thing is having that worry out there. I heard this is probably a year before I started doing comedy. I was listening to an interview with Janine Garofalo, and she said somebody asked her what she would do if somebody stole one of her bits. And she said, well, I'll just write another bit. And I got angry at that. I was like, well, fuck that. You know, it's your bit. And how could you give it away? And then, you know, I had some bits get stolen of mine. I had one bit get stolen of mine in front of me. The comic was at a show that I booked. He had been doing a bit I'd done. And I got over it. You know, what I realized was he wasn't doing the bit well. I started making my stuff so much me that if someone else did it, it sounds weird when you say it. And, you know, I used to be the joke police or the theft police. If I seen anybody taking anything, I get so angry, man, and just fucking all my energy would go into that. And now I much don't care. Good luck to everybody. I do hate to see a comic stealing stuff and doing well on a mic. It makes me crazy because I know how much effort goes into a 5-second line. My energy's got to go to fucking brushing my teeth and doing my laundry every day because getting out of bed's difficult. I don't think the longevity of people who are stealing stuff, I just don't think you can sustain that.
They don't last, and no, they don't last. They don't. I've got a we got a funny story. I got to tell you a funny story real quick though about the biggest joke stealing thief son of a bitch that's ever lived in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay.
I hope you listen to this podcast too, homie. And I'm gonna this. I'm going 10 years back, bro. This is I'm going way back in the day. This was he used to show up to open mics at Side Splitters Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he was young, dude, 18 years old, didn't know shit from butter. He would hop up there, tell his jokes, you know, and no, they weren't good, but he was a nice guy and he was trying and he was hitting it and trying hard, you know. So everybody kind of liked him. And he even like got the opportunity, one of the greatest opportunities ever, to do a guest spot for Tim Wilson, the late, great Tim.
Okay.
Wilson,
yeah, yeah.
You know? Tim, I mean, he was just a likable kid. You liked the kid. Well, one day, no one knows where he went. And then all of a sudden, somebody, one of the comics, was like, oh, shit, he's on the Kill Tony show. We're like, what? Come to find out. Oh, well, here's the thing. He goes on Kill Tony. He gets on Kill Tony. He stands up there, and he starts doing, word for word, line for line, another comic in Knoxville's whole set. Sandy Goddard, and he does Sandy's entire set, dude, and kills. So, you know, and they're all praising him. Oh man, you're great, you know. And you know, we're losing our minds here in Knoxville. We're like, this is bullshit, you know. And finally, thank God, through Twitter and everything, we were able to get a hold of Tony. And I even think Brian Callen helped us out, too. Mm. And I believe they brought him back on the show and called him out on his bullshit.
Really?
So that I think of the biggest, that's the biggest joke thief shit I've ever seen in my life. And it just blew my mind that the kid thought that he could leave Knoxville, go to L.A. And just, I just thought, what a little douchebag. So I don't know what happened to him, but.
when I started, you know, years ago when I knew comics were going, leaving their city, going to other cities. And I used to call it like, oh, they're going to do the best of, because I knew they were just going to take all the best jokes from the town they were in and take them somewhere else. But how long until that canteen runs out? You know, when everybody heard everybody else's stuff, you still got to write your own, you still got to write your own shit. And if you can't do that, there's a ceiling for you for sure.
Well, you know, I think it was probably done a lot more back in the day.
Absolutely.
Than what it is now, because it's hard to do now. It's hard to pull off now because the world is a lot smaller now. And so shit gets around. And you know, like I said, I still put my stuff out there. I put it out there and, you know, I'm like, well, what the hell? You know, this is what you have to do anyways. So, and if somebody did lift a joke or lift that, I would write more. I would, you know, and there's really nothing you can do about it. I mean, you could try calling them out, but I mean, you know, I'm of the opinion that an act is never a masterpiece. You always need to be working. So, you know, and someone who's lazy enough to steal your shit, they're not going to work on anything. So you're right. They're going to fade out. But I mean, you know, I don't judge people either. I'm not the comedy police on, like, if you do make your success through social media or how. Of course not. I'm a prop act, baby. I don't judge anybody.
I love your act, man. I loved your act. You know, that was when I got to see you, the thing I really enjoyed, man, is, you know, there's a stigma in stand-up with a lot of things, man. And I've been having these conversations here recently on the channel with a few guys. I had Stuart Huff and Tom Simmons. Tom Simmons has a show that I produce, and Stuart Huff was in, and they're two of the most original comics. They've been at 20 plus years, man. They're both fantastic, completely unique thinkers. But when they started, there was stigma, and one of them was about cruise ship comedy, right? Like, we always heard everybody talk about cruise ship comedy as lesser than, it's a failure. And I was like, well, this guy's getting to see a fucking island on the weekend, and I'm in a shithole fucking dive bar for five people. Who's winning? And we, and so we've just been wrong for so long. And you know, the same thing has been talked about with props and magic and all of that. And I've really, man, the last few years have really turned me around as far as that. And then when I got to watch you, what I really loved about it, man, is as a comedian, sometimes I hear the jokes, sometimes I can hear you on stage, but what I really hear is how you play the audience like a fucking instrument. I can listen to the laughs and the rhythm of the laughs. I don't even need to hear the jokes, and I can still fucking laugh. And everyone that was in your audience had such a great fucking time. They were happy. And to me, if these people fucking paid for a sitter and they got in the car and they got dressed up and they spent time and they don't even like spending time with each other and they're still going to come out and have a good fucking time, I'm all for it, man. If whoever is on stage, if they are treating the audience with love and respect and they make them have a good time, I'm a big fan. That's why I really enjoyed watching you perform, man. That crowd had a great fucking time.
Dude, I really appreciate that, brother. Really, I do, man. Yeah, that's all I want to do. You know, I tell people I just want to make people smile. You know what I mean? And if you can come and have a good time, man, that's what I do. I don't know, man. You know, we're talking earlier about, like, you know, drugs and coming over depression and stuff. But brother, you know, the best drug in the world that out there is those audiences. You
know, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, man. You can't explain it. You know, I've been dabbling in and out and trying to figure out what the fuck I really want to do and what I'm trying to do. And, you know, one of the things I want to do is build this fucking channel, you know, and that's been going well. But I keep moving myself away from stand up, you know, and then there are these things that happen that remind me why I do it, you know. And a bunch of years ago, a comic said, you know, I was talking about quitting. And he's like, well, if you don't think about quitting two or three times a year, you're not really doing it. And I was like, all right, well, I got that part down. You know what I mean? And one of the things that I love the most, man, is I've had some insane opportunities to work with the best comics in the world, you know, like, and some of them know my name and some of their numbers are in my phone and I can text them because we're friends and that shit's magical. I've been booked on big venues. I've worked in some of the best clubs, but the thing that's better than all of that is when a comic that I really fucking respect reaches out and asks me. And so a couple of weeks ago, man, I'm like, it is what it is. And then one of my favorite comics messaged and was like, hey, you want to come open for me? And I was like, yes, the fuck I do. And I didn't feel prepared for it, but the motivation of having that person asked me, made me want to beat my fucking chest, man. And I was like, oh, sometimes I forget I'm a motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I forget that I can go up and make anyone laugh and hit these rooms. And so I got to do this room. It was like 350 people. And it was just a fucking banger, man. And that feeling when it flows on stage, you know it's important, but you know you're prepared. There's nothing like it. I can't explain it to someone. To the uninitiated, we can talk about having kids is the best thing that's ever happened. Blah, you know, fucking all of it. You can say whatever you want. There's nothing like it, man.
Nothing, dude. Nothing. That's what always shocks me whenever, like, I look at a lot of the comics that I came up with, started out with back in the day, and I think maybe one is still doing it.
Yeah,
I look at the ones that's not doing it, and they were great, dude. They were good. Mm-hmm. We had some great, solid comics. And let me take that back. There's, you know, there's probably about four or five, I would say, but
okay,
have you know, the others that were really good and they're not doing it no more. I'm like, how do you walk away from it? How do you do that? You know, it's almost like I would need like a 5-step program, you know?
I can't remember who said it on social media forever ago, but it was a tweet that stuck with me to this day. It said, nobody's happier than someone who just quit comedy. And it's always stuck to me because, yeah, they are happy, but there is a loss that you get, but there's that peace that also comes with, all right, I don't have to work this hard for very little forever. I don't have to have the anxiety of getting 100 people to feel good today when they didn't feel good when they showed up. And getting that off your chest has to feel good. But, you know, it's that balance, man. It's, yeah, this that is a lot of work, but I just don't know what's better. And I got kids, man. I love them. They're my favorite thing in the fucking world. But I'll tell you what, you know, being on stage and hitting, there's just another, my kids got to come see me perform, and they've seen me a good few times, but three of my kids came, and two of them, it was one of their favorite comics. And for me, man, like, you know, they ain't nothing better than that, dude.
There's nothing better than that, dude. There's yeah. nothing. I had, you know, I'll never forget the first time my son, you know, came and saw me, and it was a killer. It was a killer, yeah. Too, you know?
Hell yeah.
And I remember before the show, Eric, I was peeping behind the curtains. I was like, where are you at? You know, he was texting me. He's like, Dad, I'm in the very back. And I was like, I get you. In case dad eats a bag of balls.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, man.
You're out of here. But yeah. You know, there's nothing better than just, you know, especially when you get to perform in front of them, you know?
Well, it's such a sacrificial art form, you know, like there's so much sacrifice that go, and then that goes with all art, you know, there's some sort of sacrifice. Nothing really comes good without some sort of sacrifice. And for this one, there were a lot of sacrifices, and they weren't all mine. You know, my kids were, I didn't start comedy until I was 35, and my kids were in their teens. Now all four of my kids are in their 20s, but they're in their teens, man. And me disappearing for a little while, I'm sure wasn't the easiest thing. And, you know, there were some harsh feelings involved in a lot of that. And, you know, I think they've all forgiven me for a lot of that, but, you know, and I can never make up for the time that was lost and the real fucking, like, degenerate sacrifices that I made too, you know, selfishly. But there's a little bit of, you know, there's just something about proving how good I am to them and that I belong in certain situations that kind of make up for some of that. And that's been really huge, man. Them seeing that, the vindication or whatever it is, was a really big thing for me. I think I've hung in there for a couple of years at the very least to prove to my kids that it wasn't for nothing. Like, there is something here, and I do have a skill and a talent. And, you know, that's a new thing too. Saying those things out loud, those go along with the wrong ideas we had back then, the stigmas, you know, that we are artists and that, the, you know, that we can say we're good. You know, we never get to say that earlier. You know, I come up under the tree of, you never tell yourself you're funny. You don't say you're funny. Funny people say you're funny.
Yeah.
You don't toot your own horns. And I still have a lot of that. And a lot of that is, you know.
What is that? Let's talk about this, because this is something, this is a comic thing.
Yeah.
This is a comic thing. And I don't know, dude, I think it can work. It can be bad, because there's so many comics that have a lack of confidence.
It's imposter syndrome, man.
It is. You get exactly. And it exists with comedians, because it takes so long to be able to get to where you want to be. And then you're like, well, you know, I'm not funny. I'm not this. I need to do this. I need to. And it, but I think there does come a time to where you do have to sit back and say, I am a motherfucker. I can go up there and do this. And so without being arrogant or cocky, but confident, you know?
Yeah. And that's just a thing that I always avoided, was that little bit of arrogance, that little bit of confidence that you need to fucking, this is a crazy thing we're deciding to do with the rest of our lives, with food and rent at stake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I walked away from a job because I thought I was good at dick jokes, and you know, it turns out I'm right. But I wasn't, I didn't get to tell myself that I was right for a very long time, man. And, you know, I had an argument with a buddy on a podcast a few weeks ago about self-promotion, because I am specifically not good at it. The fact that you're seeing me post things online is a real Herculean effort, and it's only coming because I have a couple of people that I'm working with that are really, you know, keeping me going and making these clips for me and stuff like that. And because I, you know, my specific brand of humor and comedy doesn't necessarily work if I'm the one that's touting its virtues. If I'm the one saying I'm so fucking good, it's really hard for me to go on stage and talk about what a fucking mess I am. You know,
yeah.
I need to stay messy to be funny. And the self-promotion eludes me. When people ask me how they can support me, I just tell them to go fuck themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really know how to build, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to do what I do and have support be a consequence of it. But it doesn't always work, man. And that imposter syndrome is real. And, you know, my guess is we're not performers because childhood was fantastically perfect. And so part of that was my dad yelling at me constantly about all kinds of dumb shit and me thinking I was bad at everything. And I still fucking do. I wake up every day and I got to fucking really convince myself that I'm good at the things I'm actually good at. But, you know, I am good at some stuff. It would be weird if I wasn't good at anything. And nobody's not good at something. Maybe they don't find it, but nobody's not good at least one fucking thing. It just so happens that this is the thing I'm good at. And it's hard to tell people that because I feel like a douchebag when I say it.
Dude, I am so with you too, because my whole life, dude, I was never, I was always told I can't do this. You can't do first time. I'm not going to say the person's name, but there was somebody who I really looked up to. And I'll never forget the first time telling them, you know, hey, I'm going to try magic. And they said, you can't do it. Your hands are too small.
Right.
You know, I mean, so many things. But that was my whole life, too. You know, I mean, so
yeah.
Imposter syndrome. And yeah, childhood sucked for me, too. All right, man. Well, you know, one thing I remember you telling me before, but I'm trying to make sure, you are originally from Boston, is it?
Yeah, just outside of Boston, New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Okay. All right. Now, and everyone knows the scene in Boston is like phenomenal. I mean, some of the goats have, you know, one of my favorite comics of all time, you know, has come out of Boston. But Bill Burr, you know,
yeah.
And absolutely, you know, love that guy. But is that where you started out doing your mind?
No, man, it's crazy, dude. I started comedy here in Greensboro, September 15th, 2011. I had been in the South already for about 9 years. I never did comedy in Boston. I never thought about doing it out there. It wasn't until I was already in the South, and honestly, man, it was podcasts. It was hearing comics. I loved comedy from when I was a kid, man. I watched specials. I just thought it was like for special people and for gods and shit, you know?
Now, did you ever go see a comedy show in Boston when you were in?
Never, dude.
Really?
Never.
Wow.
Yeah. I just consumed everything on TV and HBO, Saturday nights and Friday nights, the half hour comedy hours on MTV, all of that shit, 8 tracks and CDs, and, you know, all of it, man. But I didn't have a life where magical things were real. I thought that it only really existed on TV. I thought you were born into a family, and when you were ready, they'd come find you. And then, you know,
granted, though, let's say this, and to be fair, I think also that's the time that we grew up, also, because
yeah, for sure.
So, you know, in the 80s, celebrities were bigger than life.
Yes,
you know, Madonna, Michael Jackson, you know, these people were so huge. Richard Pryor, you know, so huge. I mean, it was almost like there was almost like a fantasy feel that they weren't even real people.
Yeah, man. I thought anybody who was on TV was a millionaire.
Yeah.
They were rich beyond their wildest dreams and so on and so forth. And so when podcasts started coming out, and I was listening to a lot of comedy on my Zune and on CDs and all of that working, and then satellite radio. And then when podcasts came out, man, it really was listening to fucking Anthony Jeselnik and Joe Rogan and all these fucking guys talking about open mics. I was like, what the fuck is an open mic, you know? And so I started looking it up, and I found a comedy show. And the first comedy show I ever went to was in Roanoke, Virginia, when I was still living there. And it was a hypnotist. And I was like, well, but there was an opener for the hypnotist. And I was like, well, I think I could be that funny, you know what I mean? And no disrespect, you know, it was a fun show, but I was like, I know I can be that funny. And then I moved here to Greensboro. I got a little bit of health news, and I was like, fuck it. And I drove around to a couple different spots, I found the Idiot Box is where I met you. I've been there ever since, man. I just started doing it, and from there, I quit my job 6 months in, dude. I quit my job. I left the family. I was a single dad. My kids were a little bit older, and I was just like, I gotta fucking go do this thing before I die. And so I just started. I started getting up every night, man. I'd drive 5 hours to do 4 minutes. I'd sleep in my van, man. Yeah. I was getting up every night, wherever the fuck I could go. I was doing whatever I could to do it. I didn't do any shows in Boston until I was a few months in. I went back. I did some shows. They were all bad. It was what it was. But then I started meeting people. And then when I finally got, I was pretty lucky pretty early because I was always pretty funny because I come from a place of pain. You know what I mean? Like I was raised by drug addicts and lawyers, and those were the same people. You know what I mean? Yeah, dude. So I was sharp. And so when I started going to clubs, I was talking very openly about my life, about my childhood. People really weren't doing that now. You know, now to see a comedian joking about getting molested on stage, there's five of me in every city. But back then, there wasn't a ton of it. So I was pretty unique. And I was getting a lot of looks at clubs. I got on at Caroline's Broadway in my nice. my first 2 years. And then I was on the road doing a couple gigs with Stanhope, probably a year and a half in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude, I got really fucking insanely lucky. I was a kind of a bigger fish in a smaller pond. And then I would go to these clubs and I would open for somebody and they could tell that I was putting the work and I was getting up every night, man. You know, my first year, I think I got up 300 and some odd times and probably a little bit more than that, if I'm being honest. And it was like that every year. And I got sharp really quickly, which I don't think would have been a thing I would have been able to do in Boston.
You know, okay, let me back up real quick because I mentioned his name a lot more too than what I ever thought I ever would. And, but I just, the man is a fucking Jedi.
Yeah,
he is people. I don't think they realize how good Doug Stanhope is.
Yeah.
You know, I always talk about like, you know, no topic is off the table for comedy, no topic, but not every comic has the skill level to talk about every topic.
Absolutely.
Doug Stanhope does. Doug Stanhope got me to laugh at his mama committing suicide.
It's one of the best stories I've ever heard. I mean, bro,
I didn't think I could laugh at that, yeah. You know? And then have you seen his This Isn't Happening, his story he tells on This Isn't?
Yeah.
Holy, dude, you're laughing. Okay, you know what the end of the story is. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, man.
And it's horrible, but it's hilarious. Yeah.
Is one of my favorite quotes was my buddy Tom Simmons. He came to watch
Tom,
me open.
I love Tom. Yeah, I just had Tom on.
Oh, did you? That's fantastic. Yeah. So he's got a new show called Dumbest Guy in the Room, which is really fantastic. But he came to see me open for Stanhope a couple times in, and he said something so fucking funny to me. And it sticks in my head. He says, I love to see an open mic in any town that Stanhope was in a week before, because all the open micers see what Stanhope does. And then they think that that's what they do now. And man, it's true. When you see him come through, you go to an open mic for the next month and it's all these people taking swings at these really big, heady topics. And they just, they're not naturally gifted in that way. Or they are don't have the time in. You know, Stanhope's I like to call them Navy SEAL comedians, man. There's only like 20, 25 of these fucking humans in the world are that good at it. And, you know, some of the people who are on that list surprise people when I say it. But, you know, like I traveled a good bit with Orny Adams. And Orny, you know, he's in Comedian and all that. But that's not – that movie isn't who that guy is. I opened for him for a good bit. He was one of the first guys to take me on the road with him and really teach me some shit. And he's a complicated human being with some opinions I agree with and don't agree with. And we don't always get along perfectly. But yeah. One thing I can say about him is He's so fucking good in the room. It's unbelievable. I would go on the road with him for five shows a week for 6 months straight. And out of those five shows, five, six, seven shows every week, he would get three, four, five standing ovations every fucking week. And people can say whatever they say about a person, but when you can get a crowd to react that way, I don't give a fuck what you're doing up there. I don't give a fuck what you're doing if the crowd loves you that much. And he's one of those guys. And, you know, there's a good amount of them. Beth Stelling is one. Eddie Pepitone is one. There's just these fucking bangers who are completely unique and original. They are one of one. You know, there's nobody else like Doug. There's nobody else like Orny. There's nobody else like Beth. And there's, you know, a lot of these people like that. But they're just so remarkable. And, you know, these are the people that I've gotten to fucking work with and like, you know, be a complete fucking comedy nerd and pick their brains and ask questions that other people aren't asking. And, you know, some of the stuff I learned from these great comics isn't even about comedy, you know?
Yeah.
One of the best lessons I ever learned was to get out of the hotel room. You know, when I was traveling, man, I'd get into town, I'd get the hotel, I'd stick in there, I'd take my nap, I'd get up 45 minutes before the show, I'd take my shower, I'd fucking clean myself up, I'd go do the show, I'd start drinking, I'd get my fucking cold mozzarella sticks, I'd be back in the hotel room watching House Hunters International until I passed out, and so I could go do it all again the next day. And Orny took me on the road, and he's like, what time? We're getting up at noon, we're going to have brunch, we're going to meet some fucking locals, we're going to walk around, then we take a nap, you know? And that little shit, man, being on the road got me a lot healthier. It also made me stronger on stage.
Well, you know, if you think, exactly, Eric, you think about this, is, don't get me wrong, man, I've done that same thing. I've locked, laid in the bed until,
yeah, dude,
you know, until I had to move,
yep,
you know, in those hotel rooms, you know? But if you can get out and look at the town a little bit, know a little something, hell, I mean, that gives you something to talk about on stage related, you know,
yeah.
Whenever, and this is something that, you know, and you know this, you know exactly this, this is important comedy 101, but know what town you're in.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude.
At the Stardome, I was at the Stardome in Birmingham. And I don't know if you've traveled down the interstate there, but if you look up, there's a billboard for this attorney every 5 miles, Alexander, yeah. Shalala, I can't even say it. Shalala. And, you know, I was on stage and somebody said something about, you know, have you been to jail before? Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah. And I called Alexander Shalala, you know, I threw that back out there to him and it just, you thought the roof was going to blow off.
Yep.
You know, so it was from, you know, knowing something about their town. They love that, you know.
It creates equity, man. You know, going out and talking to the waitress at the fucking diner, she's going to say something about that dumb bridge that's always closed or whatever it is. And that was, seeing these comics go up and being able to naturally open and just have it in the pocket, even if they weren't going to use it, but having it was useful. And, you know, it's just good for your fucking mental health to get out of bed, too.
It's good to get out of that damn room. You
know? Yes, sir.
So, because, yeah, that's, I'll never forget that feeling. I'm like, I'm just, you kind of feel like, God, this sounds so shitty to say. But when you think about it, it's like, I'm a caged monkey until it's time for me to dance.
Yeah, dude, I had a, you're exactly right. I had a meltdown. About a year and a half ago on stage, I was doing this bar show that I really just didn't want to do, you know, and these people just started talking during the show. And I'm a pretty, you know, I can be mean, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like I grew up how I grew up and I can make most human beings cry with words. I'm pretty fucking talented. And so I did, you know, and I used to do it. And it was hilarious to me and all my buddies would laugh. And now I'm a fucking fully formed human being. And it made me sad. And I got this adrenaline that I didn't want. And I felt like I was a fucking tiger locked in the cage and people were throwing trash at me. And all I wanted to do was fucking claw the goddamn eyes out. But I couldn't. And so the only thing I could do was use words. And man, I don't want that shit. I, yeah, that, dancing like a monkey, man, I have definitely felt that way. And that's why, you know, I think the benefit of the, I'm coming around on the social media. I'm only 15 years late on it, but better late than never. But I, you know, having people who, I'd rather have 20 people who are interested in seeing me than 200 people who could give a fuck. I trust those people a little bit more, and I care more about their night than people who just don't give a fuck. A late show at a Friday on a comedy at a comedy club when they are just there to get drunk and disrupt. And then the other one of the bad parts with the social media is all the clips of people aren't posting, you know, jokes. Yeah. They're mostly posting interactions with crowd. And then these people are seeing it. They're going out to the show and like, oh, I'm gonna fucking yell out and get on the social media. And I'm not the guy for that shit, man. I shut it down pretty aggressively. And I don't like that part of my personality. So it's not always my favorite
interaction. I'm not the guy either. You know, yeah. So I will shut shit down, but I like to keep it as playful as I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I let them know who's boss, you know, and I mean, I think any comic should do that. Yeah, any comic should do that because you need to control the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
there's such a fine line there between hey, let me poke fun with this guy, or dad just fucking smacked cousin Ron at fucking Thanksgiving dinner. You know what I mean? Like there's a real heavy tone sometimes, and I, you know. One of my weaknesses is that I cannot always walk that fucking line, you know, and with the comedy thing, the reason I know the day I started is because it's so important to me. Right. But I also, every year I try to take the thing I'm the worst at and try to focus on it for a year and really sharpen that tool. And that's been one I haven't been able to round the edges off on, man. Every year I really got to consider it as one of my weaknesses is to remember that this crowd just wants to have fun. And just because there's a couple assholes doesn't mean that they all are. And, so, you know, so sometimes I react poorly, but trying to get better at it. It's not always my strong suit.
You know, a lot of times I had a story of a guy. He was this big old redneck, ginormous redneck. And he was talking a lot in the show, which he thought he was helping.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started making fun of him, and he was too dumb to realize that everybody was laughing at him. So, but the whole show, this is what I did, though, man. Instead of shutting his ass completely down, which I could have, but I kept him at bay. I kept him like on a leash. You know what I mean? I would go back and, you know, poke Dumbo, you know, a little bit. Yeah. And at the end of the night, he was so drunk and belligerent, he wound up buying 12 shirts. So,
can't beat that. Love it when it works out that way.
So, you know, it worked out, but
yeah.
I mean, dude, I'm going to send this to you there. I just saw this too. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a TikTok clip. I don't know this comic's name. I'm not sure what his name is, but, he shuts down, you know, okay. We all know this. And for you guys listening, for the listeners, every show, it seems like there's always that one person sitting in the front row, or it happens that just looks like they're miserable.
Arms crossed.
Just
staring right through you. No smiles, no laughs.
Nothing. So, but anyways, this is a TikTok clip of some guy sitting in the front row acting the same way. And one of the comics, because there's two comics, but one of the comics says, you look like you read a lot of books. And the guy responds with, I wish I was reading one right now.
Oh, this is Akash Singh.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. People send me this video and they're like, Danny, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about this? And I'm being honest, man. I think it's very unfortunate that we live in a day and age where everything is documented, and that poor bastard in the front row has this documented now. But he would have been fine if he would have shut his damn mouth.
Yeah, man.
You know, he smarted off, and then he just caught dude on the wrong day.
You know, even bad comics are typically pretty intelligent. You know, and so we, you know, what's funny is that clip, the reason I've seen it is that was in Raleigh at Goodnights.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So that's why I saw it, because they had just they're in a new building and all that. But that's one of the clubs that came up in. Yeah, man, it is wild. It's that old thing that people used to say, you know, if I feel bad that he, you know, it's kind of memorialized him being a fucking piece of shit. But also, if you wanted people to, you know, treat you better, then behave better. You know what I mean? And
Absolutely.
I used
But
to struggle with this.
more than likely, that guy would have went on with his set if dude would have shut up
Yes,
and
for
not
sure.
tried to smart off or one up it, you know.
Yeah, man.
So
I used to have these things on stage where I would talk about some people who had did some really shitty things to me. I don't really do it as much anymore, but I did it. And then I went through this period of like little guilt where I was like, wow, should I be shaming them for these shameful behaviors still years and years after they did them? And then somebody said, you know, if people want you to talk better of them, then they should have behaved better. And that's kind of where I land with that too. You know, that guy, don't go to a show, man, on a first date. That's good advice for people. Don't take somebody you don't know to a comedy show. It's not a good place for a first date. You're not going to get to know each other any better. It's I did a show on Valentine's Day, Danny. So it was like November. I was like 2 years in. I was traveling. I was living in my van. I was doing okay. I was making a little bit of money. I had that first half hour that was getting me paid, you know? And in like November, they said, we have this show. It's at this music venue in February. It's on Valentine's Day. I said, well, that's a horrible idea. Then they told me they were paying, and I was like, for sure, I'll do it. And so I go and I do it. And I call and I check in like January. And I was like, are we still on for the gig? You know, and they're like, yes. And so they said, we're going to have a crowd there. I said, oh, that's fantastic. And they said, yeah, these people are getting married, and they're bringing their bridal party over to this music venue slash bar. I said, this is gonna be the worst show anybody's ever done. But they're still paying me, so I'm showing up because I need food. And so I show up, the show goes too long. They're all there, the bridal party's getting drunk. I have clips of this actually on YouTube that I keep hidden. But so I'm on stage. And this one woman kept asking all the comics for a blow the whole night, which is not a bad ask, you know what I mean? Like some of us,
at least she was trying to stay somewhere.
you know what I mean? But she kept asking if she can go on stage and sing during the middle of the comedy show. And so now I'm on stage. I got the drummer and the bassist to come up with me to kind of, because I knew it was going to be bad, but if they just play while I'm doing jokes, it's good. And so they're doing that. I bring her on stage. She can't remember the words to any song, so I get them to play Wheels on the Bus, and I'm just making fun of her. People start throwing beer cans at me, and then the groom, who is in full marine blues, he has a cast on a leg, he's on crutches. He comes to the door, which is right by the stage, and he tries to get out. And I was like, somebody help this man. He's a goddamn hero, you know? And so he goes through the door, and a minute later, he comes back in. I was like, why'd you come back in? I said, you made it out. In here is not good. Out there is fantastic, you know? And he said, I'm looking for my wife. And this is the only thing I did that could be misconstrued as a mistake, is I said, well, that, you know, don't worry about that because it's not going to work out anyways. Now it's their wedding day. And I realize I should not have said it. He giggles, but his bride from the back of the room starts motherfucking me. Oh, go shut the fuck up. I'll fucking kill you. She runs up on stage. She looks like she's going to hit me. So now he feels obligated to start coming up on stage, but he's on crutches. It's 3 steps. So I help him get on stage because he's going to come fuck me up, but he's on crutches. I don't give a fuck. And we'll get a good video, you know? He comes on stage. We talk. I tell them that they're going to remember me far longer than their marriage is going to last. All the Marines in the crowd start threatening me, tell me they're going to kill me. So I do the rest of my time. My buddy pulls out a knife to protect me. I come off stage. I grab my check. I drove two people there. I left them there because they could get a ride home. I was in my van so quick, dude. These people, what a fuck. It was on Valentine's Day. It was one of the worst shows I ever did. I don't even know how I got on that story, but
Well,
that's
you
it's
know
one of
what?
my.
You know what? Because I everybody on the podcast, they tell a hell gig story. That
There you
sounds
go.
like it right there.
That was it. That was one of them.
Well,
I've
that's
been.
a That's a great
I've been
one.
Physically assaulted on stage by Marines.
That is crazy. Well, let's do this, Eric, while I'm thinking of it.
Yeah,
while
man.
I'm thinking of it. You know what? And I'll here. Let me we're gonna do a magic trick before we get out of here, Eric.
Lovely.
Here we go. On the Abracadam podcast, we always I'm gonna try to do some mind reading, brother. Here
All
we
right,
go.
dude.
I'm gonna try to get up inside your head and redecorate.
Hell yeah.
Here we go. Watch. All right. Here we go. Right here. Make sure I've got five cards. Can you see them? Here, let me make sure because it'll glare.
Yeah, I got them.
All right. What I want you to do, I want you to think of one of those cards, Eric. Just get it in your dome. You got it.
I got it.
All right. Here we go. Don't forget it, or I sound like a dumbass more than usual. Here we go. I'm going to lose them in the deck. I'm going to try to cut to the card that you're thinking of. I'm going to try. I don't know. I tell you what, Eric, for the first time for the Abracadam listeners, will you name the card you're only thinking of?
Yeah, man, it's the Eight of Diamonds.
The Eight of Diamonds. Ladies and gentlemen, I have cut to one card and one card only.
Hell yeah.
The Eight of Diamonds.
Hell yeah, buddy.
You have been abracadammed, Eric Trundy. Yes, you have, brother. I tell you what, Eric, man, dude, I love talking to you, man, and I could talk to you for hours. I know you are a busy dude, and this is the cool thing. I've been like on this Greensboro run because Greensboro, North Carolina, for you guys that do not know, is loaded with freaking talented comics. It is stupid how crazy how much talent is in that town.
Yeah, man.
Jenny Stencil, which is a true gem. You guys need to make a statue of Jenny just somewhere in the middle of Greensboro.
I won't tell her that.
you named him earlier. Tom Simmons is a freaking joke machine.
Yeah, man.
He is a joke machine. And Dusty Cagle, bro.
Yeah, buddy.
My man, Dusty Cagle. I had Dusty on. I had the pleasure to meet Dusty probably a month or two back ago. We did a show at the Vault in Clover.
Oh, very cool. Very
in
cool.
South Carolina. And Lucas. Lucas, a good dude, too. I cannot remember his last
Lucas
name.
Lucas Gumbrecht.
Yeah. Lucas. I loved him. Both him and Dusty, dude. I love them both. And now Eric Trundy. So I've been on this Greensboro kick. I don't know with comics. So coming on the podcast, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man.
Here's the thing, though, Eric. Before we get out of here, and I know you suck at it, but tell the audience, let my listeners know where they can learn more about Eric Trundy.
Yeah, man. Mostly, I guess, just go to the Instagram. Find me on Instagram. It's just my name, at Eric Trundy. There's a link in my bio that'll bring you to my show on YouTube. I also produce. So when you go find that show, my show is called Never Been Happier. Like I said, it's kind of like comics on the Muppet Show with crying. You know what I mean? It's basically what I'm going for. And so, but all the shows on that channel, on that YouTube, I'm producing those, making a lot of sketches and stuff like that, man. I'm really trying to dive into the creativity thing and do that. So that's the best way to find me for right now is at Eric Trundy on Instagram and then follow that link in the bio. I'm really getting to the point where I'm like, all right, yeah, I guess you can subscribe to my, what's up YouTube. I hate being that guy, but I'm sitting at 997 subscribers today, which is, you know, pretty good. I got to get to 1,000. So I'm hoping to get to 1,000 by the end of the day.
Dude, I think we can make it happen because I've never been happier on YouTube, guys. So go subscribe and follow this page. I promise you it's professional looking content and you're going to enjoy it. Eric Trundy, brother, it's been a pleasure, man. And I cannot wait to see you again, brother, in person. Thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with stand-up comedian Eric Trundy. Definitely, if you get a chance, be sure to check out his YouTube channel, Never Been Happier. Some really good content on there, man. Eric knows how to do a podcast, and he's definitely doing it right. Also, check him out on Instagram, and I promise you'll laugh your ass off at his stand-up reels on Instagram. I know I do every time. But yeah, that's it for this episode, guys.
If you have not done so, be sure to like and subscribe and follow the Abracadam Podcast wherever it is you listen to podcasts. Tell your damn friends too. And also be sure to give me a follow if you have not done so yet at Super Magic Boy on Instagram. And like always, Abracadamits.
Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party!